now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death. Oh.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast. From class to cults, from the cheese in between, the movies are B. You enter him in his grade A. And I am your host, Jason Jackanetti, once again out for a solo outing here. And tonight, I'm going back to the scary year of 1992. In fact, Halloween night 1992, where we are going to look at the controversial BBC mockumentary, Ghostwatch. And we'll get to it right after this.
On Saturday night, we'll be visiting the most haunted house in Britain. But will the ghosts be there? Can you take it?
Ghostwatch, a Screen One special for Halloween, Saturday at 9:25 on One.
Ghostwatch aired exactly one time, Halloween night 1992, on BBC One. The writer was Stephen Volks and the director, Leslie Manning. It was a drama they produced for the BBC anthology series Screen One by Richard Broke, Ruth Baumgartner, and Derek Nolan. Despite having been recorded weeks in advance, the narrative was presented as live television. During its first and only time being aired completely on UK television, the show attracted considerable amounts of fervor, in resulting in over estimated a million phone calls, requiring the BBC switchboard on the night of the broadcast comprised of a mixture of complaints and praise for the program's unique presentation. It caused a severe outage for the telephones coming. This same thing, if you can think about this, literally is exactly what Orson Welles did in 1938 for the War of the Worlds radio broadcast, and then 1994, Without Warning television film, both caused a nationwide panic in the U.S. This mockumentary, whatever you want to call it, TV special, literally did exactly what it was supposed to do. It scared people witless. Now, I've said it's only been shown on BBC television in its entirety one time. That is true. It runs 91 minutes. I know you're saying in the little commercial you heard, it started at 9:25. It had to start after 9 o'clock. Anything prior to 9 o'clock on the BBC, they could not show anything like this. You couldn't show horror stuff. You couldn't show anything. It had to be after. It had to be later at night. Okay? Now, what winds up happening is that, you know, other channels like the Canadian digital channel Scream or the Belgian channel Canvas, like other ones have shown this. It's been on Shudder. It's available on archive.org. Like, it's there, and it's actually been able to be seen there. But on British television, they've never shown it again. But in fact, the British Film Institute released a 10-year anniversary edition on VHS and DVD. And there's a DVD coming out, and then this past year or two, I'm trying to remember, the 30th anniversary Blu-ray release came out, which had this just an amazing presentation of it. There's also a documentary, which is well worth the watch. It's called Ghostwatch Behind the Curtains, based on its lasting impact. That was out on DVD. That's now out in a bunch of different places you can see it. So anyway, let's get to this. Ghostwatch is rendered like a live broadcast, like I said, and is hosted by Michael Parkinson in an attempt to present concrete evidence of paranormal phenomena. To achieve this, the program launches an on-air investigation into the house in a fictional Fox Hood Drive, North Holt, Greater London. Pamela Early and her daughters, Suzanne and Kim, are tormented by a poltergeist referred to by Kim as Mr. Pipes, his name originating from the noises made by the house's plumbing. Pipes routinely possesses and harms Suzanne, and is said to dwell in the house's basement, referred to as the glory hole. Now, I'm just going to say this as an American, having all these people say glory hole over and over again, I'm like, okay, I get it, 92, I get it that we're in Britain, but I think at some point, you know, you have to divorce yourself from what you know as if you're an American listening to this in the, you know, current day. Okay, so we just got to go past that. Anyway. Parkinson is supported by fellow host Sharon Green, who ventures into the house to spend the night with the Earlies. Her husband, Mike Smith, who oversees staging phone calls for the public who wishes to share their own ghost stories, and comedian Craig Charles, who interviews the locals regarding this street's violent history. Green is accompanied by her camera crew, Chris Mullen and Mike Aton, played by actual BBC technicians. Parkinson is joined in the studio by Dr. Lynn Picasso, a psychiatrist studying the phenomenon. Now, you have a mix here of actual BBC, you know, people who work for the BBC, actual interviewers, actual people who have jobs on the air that everyone knows. So when you have that awe of realism, then when you bring in an actress to play Dr. Lynn Picasso, or you have somebody, an actor playing this role, whatever, you don't know them. You have never had a relationship with them being your newscasters. So that becomes much harder because now you don't know that they're actors doing this, but you have, you know, actual people who you may have seen in the past on the news or on whatever programming doing exposés on whatever. That lends this a real deep level of realism. At first, the broadcasts seem harmless, but supernatural phenomena occur in the house. Suzanne is exposed, falsifying the ghost's noise, convincing Parkinson that the whole thing is a hoax. Suzanne speaks with the demonic voice and develops scratches across her face. The public shares their ghost stories. Numerous callers mention they've seen pipes lurking in the house, and many people say paranormal incidents are happening in their own homes. The great part about this is as you're going through and you watch this, they have, they're panning through a shot and you'll see something out of the corner of your eye. And you're like, wait, what was that? And then they'll go back and it's gone. And it's just all the places that they put Mr. Pipes into the scenes, make your eye not believe what you're seeing. If you are sitting there and you're believing this is real, and this is very much what happened with the Blair Witch Project, and I'll talk about that in a minute, right? If you believe what you're seeing is real and you become invested in these people and you start saying, okay, what am I seeing here? You start getting scared of what actually could be occurring. And it's very, very disheartening if you're sitting there and you're obviously hearing people call on the phone and you're having this and whatever else, you know, is happening on the screen. All those things start leading you to a place where you're like, wow, could this really be happening? And then you had people calling the phone, and the people calling on the phone sound like regular people. The phone calls they have are just regular people. And there were actual phone calls coming in and people were actually listening to what people were saying. So what wound up happening was people felt like, well, I'm calling, everyone else is calling. And they start talking about like, well, my dog is just barking at the window, or my TV keeps turning off, or that, like something along those lines, which started getting people to start seeing things that weren't there. Right. And this is very much what wound up happening with Orson Welles in when he did The War of the Worlds, where they would just continue on with the regular programming and then cut in with those stories. It terrified people. I mean, even though they would say, this is a radio drama, this isn't real, people didn't want to hear that all the time or missed it and were scared. And to say that England was experiencing some of that during Halloween 1992 is kind of an understatement, as it was literally going, anyone who was watching this, even if you thought it was complete bunk and you see through it, you had to be able to admit, like, wow, this is powerful. What's happening here is bigger than just a little special on, late night for, BBC television. Pipes' background is slowly pieced together. An interviewed neighbor mentions Mother Seddons, a Victorian baby farmer who murdered children, reimagined as a boogeyman by the locals. Later, an anonymous call from Pipes' probation officer reveals his name is Raymond Tunsalt, a disturbed pedophile who believed he was possessed by the Seddons, hanging himself in the glory hole, where his body was eaten by his relatives' cats. Picasso then suggests that there may be a greater force at play, as possible ancient evil that possessed Mother Seddons, Tunsil, and countless others. As the house grows increasingly dangerous, Suzanne disappears and is heard from within the locked glory hole. The camera crew forces the door open, only for a mirror to fall and wound Eitan. Abruptly, the footage shows the house has returned to normal. However, Picasso realizes that the footage is from earlier in the broadcast. She realizes that Pipes has used the broadcast to create a nationwide seance circle invading public homes. This is where things got interesting, folks, because at this point now, they're like, wait, that's this. And now you're following along. I know this whole thing is bunk. I'm watching this on a Blu-ray. I'm watching this cleaned up, whatever. But man, it could just pulls you right in. You get in there and you're like, okay, I can see how this hysteria could totally happen. Especially in 1992, we were not used to this yet. We were not used to having these things necessarily, even though it's Halloween night and like, oh, look at it lining up. This literally would have terrified people, many, many people who were watching it. The live broadcast resumes as Pamela, Kim, and the injured Eitan are evacuated from the house. Inside, Green and Miller attempt to rescue Suzanne, but Green is dragged through the cellar door, which slams shut. The program concludes with Pipes taking over the studio, causing all onset except for Parkins to flee. Parkinson wanders about in the darkened studio, beginning to show signs that he is being possessed by Pipes. Okay, so the last part, the studio part, was to me probably the weakest part of this entire mockumentary, because it's exploding things, whatever. You would think, just cut away, right? And that's what you would normally think in that situation. But what winds up happening is that's where I think if people are going to see through it, if they were scared up to this point, they could start to see through it at that aspect of it. It still, to me, does not diminish the overall punch of this mockumentary. This, to me, was exactly the kind of thing that if I had known about this in 1992 and the ability to watch it, we would 100% been watching this. It's great that it's now available. It's great that there's all this behind the scenes stuff about it. It's great that it's all out there. The problem is that, some people have never heard of it, and I think you're missing out. And then somebody say, well, it looks dated. Like, well, yeah, it's 1992. It looks like 1992. It looks like 1992 in Britain, right? Which is what it should be. But part of that, though, is what gives it some of its charm. The story is based on the tale of the Edenfield poltergeist. The presentation contained realistic elements, which suggested that a casual viewer that is an actual documentary. The studio scenes were recorded in Studio D, BBC L Street Studio, Clarendon Road. The scenes at the house and the street where they were all shot were located around 5 to 6 weeks before the recording of studio scenes. The recorded scenes in the house and the street then played in the studio where Michael Parkinson, Mike Smith, and the fictional Dr. Picasso interacted with them. The phone call, the phone number was shown on the screen so that viewers could call in and discuss ghostly phenomena. The number was a standard BBC call-in number at the time, right? Which was also used on programs like Going Live, and callers who got through were connected first to a message telling them that the show was fictional before being given the chance to share their own ghost stories. Probably as a way of writing future ghost watch. However, the phone number was besieged by countless callers during the show, and many who telephoned simply got an engaged tone, particularly because there were only five telephone operators available. The that commonly happen while phoning BBC's call-in shows and inadvertently adding to the realism and instead of reassuring that it was fiction. So that terror that it's engaged, the phone is sounding, you know, the different, it doesn't sound like it does here in America, but it's like, to know that, they're like, wow, this must be real. It was supposed to be, this originally was thought up by Stephen Volks as a 6-part drama, simply called Edge of Darkness, in which fictional paranormal investigator and TV reporters investigated poltergeist all across northern London housing estates. Honestly, I think this works better like this. However, the, what was the, broadcast from properly, the vein of Neil, it was a quartermass experiment and Quartermass in the Pit, which were both, which were all hell breaks loose. However, when the producer, Ruth Baumgartner, doubted the viability of an entire miniseries instead of a 90-minute TV special, they suggested they do the whole thing like episode 6, portraying it as an actual live broadcast on Halloween. BBC, however, became concerned about the effect the broadcast would have on the public and very nearly pulled the show shortly before broadcast. Ultimately, they insisted on adding opening credits, including the writer's name, in addition to Screen One title sequences. I don't know how many people technically looked at that and were worried, like, oh, okay, that helped it. By way of having it seem fictional. The problem is, unless you were running across the bottom, this is fictional, telling people over and over again, if you miss that, this definitely plays into the idea that this is real. Although Ghostwatch was aired under the Screen One drama banner, the documentary style led many viewers believe it was real, right? We just said that. The BBC was besieged with phone calls from irate and frightened viewers, among them Parkinson's elderly mother. British tabloids and the newspapers criticized the BBC the next day for distributing disturbing nature of some scenes, such as Green's final scene where she is locked in an understairs cupboard with a howling ghost and Parkinson's eerie possession scene. False rumors persist that Sarah Green had advertised the program on her Saturday morning children's show Going Live, including a visit to the location of the haunting, and gave the impression that she was taking part in a reality show. The rumor was debunked via the documentary Ghost Watch Behind the Curtain. After acquiring 3 more likely episodes of Going Live the week before, the day before Ghost Watch was shown, the blog's editor found no reference to the show. Green did, however, appear on the following Monday's Children's BBC strand to reassure younger viewers that the show was not real. The program has yet to be reshowed in full on UK broadcast television after initial effects. There were many people who were reporting psychological effects, you know, especially with if they felt that someone might have, and again, going through some of these things, it looks like, so people who might be easily influenced were convinced this was real. It just led to panic. And that, to me, is one of the coolest things that this film does. It is, when you look at it, it's not overproduced. It looks like a documentary. It looks like what we would, this is before reality television was a thing that we had all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, shoved down our gullets, right? So what winds up happening is you have a situation where things seem real, and we would then get this with the Blair Witch Project. And I understand the last broadcast, what came before that, and I get that, I do. But the Blair Witch Project literally captured an entire country. Like, I mean, it wound up going wider than that. But it there was a hold that unless you were alive at that point in the 90s and old enough to know it, you may not realize how much of an impact the Blair Witch Project had on American cinema in general. I saw that movie with my brother, my girlfriend at the time, and our friend, and like, even though we knew this couldn't be real, this can't be real, there was no real internet yet. There was a website for Blair Witch Project, which told you it was real. It was all about it being real and all about these people, and we're trying to find them and what, and the curse and all this stuff. And they put books out about the curse of the Blair Witch and all this stuff about the Blair Witch. And you're like, wow, like, this looks like it could be real. Now, when you watch The Blair Witch, many people have complained that the movie is boring and nothing happens. And I'm like, that's probably what makes it feel more real. Since nothing seems to, quote unquote, happen the entire time, you start getting to a point where you're like, what are we, like, why are we watching this? Like, it's just kind of like three people bickering in the woods and whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, the night scene and whatever, those where she's crying, and then you have the part where they're running for their lives, and then they go, what is that? And it's like, it literally was one of the producers or directors in a mask in the woods, and it scared them, and it's all real. So you're feeling their real terror. And when you hear that real terror in their voice, or you start hearing like the way they're speaking, it doesn't sound like they're acting. It sounds like they're just talking. That's what Ghostwatch did as well. Because it's very, you know, designed to be BBC one, you know, very, you know, kind of like regimented. This is a, we're having a serious discussion here and stuff like that. They never break that feel, that character. The reporter, again, she was on kids television and stuff. She's a person people knew. So if we were watching this and the local news anchor, I know most of you probably don't watch the news, but like growing up in New York, if we were watching TV and Chuck Scarborough and whoever came on and he said something, you believed them because that's the guy who gave you the news every night on whatever channel, NBC or whatever kind of thing, right? Right. Or if you had somebody who came on and was like and telling you the truth, like that you get your news from about whatever war or about the economy or about whatever, that made it easy for you to then buy into the fact that he's like, yes, this happened here, like whatever, because it wasn't delivered over the top. It wasn't delivered like wink, wink at the camera. And because you take things seriously, you lend an air of believability to something that in reality seems pretty far-fetched. Now, I'm not saying that there weren't people who saw through it and the Oz is a joke or whatever. That's fine. It's cool. Let me tell you right now, I am 100% okay if that's what happened. And if you had any listeners from over the pond, from across the pond, remember this, please write in. I would love to know about this. But the key being is, at the end of the day, is that believability leads you to an experience that you could never have a second time. Knowing what happens in Ghostwatch, you can't watch it a second time and have the exact same experience. Now, I have a perfect example of this. I saw Blair Witch in a literally packed movie theater, and you could hear a pin drop in there. No one was saying it was just, you were scared for like, okay, what's going on? Because you were confused. Now, my brother, myself, you know, kind of thing, like our buddy, Bob, you know, we kind of knew this was kind of on, you know, not in the level, but because we're wrestling fans and everything's always a work. So we know it's a work, but what winds up happening is, a lot of people were very, very scared. Now, I really enjoyed the Blair Witch Project, and I got very into like looking, reading the books and doing this stuff. It's just really cool stuff. The special that was on TV that was shot like a real TV special about like their actual disappearance, and they had their actual family on crying over them with real pictures of them when they were kids. You're like, wow, this sells it like it's real. What winds up happening is, even here with Ghostwatch, because it's sold as real, you can never get that same experience second time watching. It's still enjoyable. I like this. I can watch this. It's enjoyable to watch. I want to show Haley it, but I think I need to make sure no phones, no nothing, no distractions. We need to sit down and watch because I want to see what her reaction is. So I said I had an example of this. When Blair Witch came out on VHS, yes, VHS, and I didn't have a Blu-ray player at that time, and Blu-ray was relatively new. I got a copy, and my friend Flavia, who had seen it, or I think she had seen it, and our buddy Pedro, two people on my track team. We went back to the dorm room after we went and had dinner, back to the dorm room because we, you know, eating on the quad. And I said, "Want to watch Blair Witch Project?" And Pedro's like, "Yeah, dude, I heard it's amazing." I go, "Oh, it's good." And I put it on, and we're just sitting because they don't have, and we're all kind of just like sitting on the bed watching across the room the TV. And we get to the end of the movie, and I'm not even watching the end of the movie. I'm just looking at the two of them. And it seems weird. She's like, "Jay," I'm like, I had to see their reaction because I know Pedro had never seen it and he wanted to. And Pedro was a really smart guy, but he bought into what that was happening. At the end, it just cuts off at the end of Blair Witch. And he jumps, he goes, "What the hell happened to him? What happened?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, dude." That pure experience is so lost today. And that was what I was hoping that he had. And I said, "Okay, buddy, it's fake." He's like, "What do you mean it's fake?" I'm like, "It's all fake." And I explained it. He goes, "Oh," and he felt cheated. I said, "No, dude, you just had the exact experience you're supposed to have. You will remember this the rest of your life," is something like, "Whoa, they got me," right? And it's hard because it does suck you in, even though people have said, again, it's very boring, it sucks you in. When you watch Ghostwatch, there's stuff happening the whole time. And the part where the little girl goes and she's faking it because she wants the ghost to be there, she wants people to believe them, you, again, the little girl, as they're acting, and people say, oh, they're not the greatest actress in the world. Okay. So it's believable enough that she's so scared that people will think they're lying and they're going to ignore them and that they're going to hurt her or her sister or her mother. They are scared. And people are like, well, they should just move out. How easy for you to leave your house right now? Walk out of your house right now and have nothing behind. Leave all your possessions behind. Nothing. You walk out with no money, no nothing. You can do that? No, of course you're not. But that's what makes that part of it so enjoyable for the way it was filmed and stuff. Now, you're saying, Jay, but it doesn't have killer effects. It doesn't have this. That's fine. Sometimes the most effective things in life are the things that are relatively simple. And being relatively simple in conceit and setup, but yet being realistic enough where you're like, I could buy this, sometimes leads to an experience that is unmatched by big Hollywood kind of, you know, productions. If you have never seen Ghostwatch, you need to watch it, right? If you saw Ghostwatch before, it's worth a rewatch. It is a great Halloween night kind of movie to pop on, mockumentary pop on, because it gives you a different feel. 1992, so I'm a freshman in high school at this point. So Halloween 92. I probably had football practice, knowing like the way school goes, right, kind of thing, or whatever, or whatever, you know, like, right, I'm saying, I probably had football practice, right, that day, depending on what, it was a Saturday, if I'd had a game, who knows, right, but the whole idea was is that it hit real, and Halloween night, I mean, I don't know, I mean, everyone has different stories, so my brother and I did a lot of, we would go trick-or-treating or whatever, and we would come home and have a whole bunch of candy, and we were always off November 1st going to Catholic school because that's All Saints Day, so very often, we would stay up and watch horror movies all night and just eat candy. Right? Halloween to me has great memories. Halloween is literally my favorite holiday of the entire year. And it has those great memories tied to it. But, you know, the thing is, something like this would have been really cool in 92 to sit down and watch when it was happening live, eating our candy, doing or whatever, but we just didn't have the opportunity. So again, if anyone across the pond, especially if you had an opportunity to watch this when it happened live, please write me, let me know. Let's talk about that. That to me is super, super cool. Anyway. All right, folks. So that about wraps up Ghostwatch. Like I said, it's readily available. It's on Internet Movie Data. It's on archive.org. You can get it. Go watch it. Spend the time. Watch it. It is worth your time. It's on Shudder. This recording, it's on Shudder. It's well worth your time watching. The Blu-ray special edition pack I got is phenomenal. Has everything. Big set coming out. It's got the whole, everything you won't ever possibly want to know about this all together. So I can't recommend it enough. It's great. So folks, thank you very much for your time here. Thank you all for downloads and listens. We appreciate it. Of course, my dad will be back. I'm going to have, you know, I'm trying to line other guests up, but like I always say, the hard part is, you know, in the really real world, you know, getting time to get two people together to record is hard enough. Now trying to get two people together who live hundreds or thousands of miles apart is really hard as well. But thank you all for your support. We all appreciate it. So like we say here, keep those cards and letters coming and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which up until a few days ago was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters? Or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at 2TrueFreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots, Bugs, Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!